Okay, welcome. It's Deb. Welcome to, I think we're in week four of our Starving for God Big Book Awakening workshop, as we have a look at our food issues, our body issues, our life issues. And before we get started today, I had a request from one of the participants to introduce ourselves when the recording started, so that those folks who were already on the call had a chance to announce themselves. So go ahead and everybody, even if you have already announced yourself before the recording, go ahead and just announce yourself. So I'll announce myself. So I'm Deb, and I'm from San Diego, compulsive eater and restrictor. And who else wants to announce themselves? Go ahead and unmute yourself with star six. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Lynn from Sherman Oaks, and I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Lynn.
This is Kimberly Levester-Ross. I'm a compulsive eater addict from Tahunga, California.
Hello.
This is Sue
Tanya
W.
from Boston. This is Tanya from Boston.
Hi, Tanya.
This is Sue W. Western Mass, compulsive overeater.
Hey, Sue. And who else just shared?
Jan from Burbank, compulsive eater.
Hi, Jan.
Sue from San Toledo, compulsive
Hello,
eater.
Hello, Sue.
And bulimic.
Great.
Alice from San Jose, compulsive overeater.
Hey, Alice.
Suzanne from San Mateo, recovered compulsive overeater.
Hey, Suzanne. Is that all we got today? All right. We've been getting a really, really good number of folks who've been on these calls, which is just awesome. I'm just so happy that the message is spreading out there. So continue, and Suzanne, thank you, because I continue to have people contacting and wanting to just join and be, even if they're auditing. And so just thank you for continuing to do your service and share this message with other people. Who's just gotten on the line?
Sorry, it's Pam.
Hey, Pam. Pam, where are you calling from? We just lost that. Okay. All right. So go ahead and mute yourselves by pressing star six. And I'm going to now do that function so that we don't hear the little pinging coming in as we're meditating. Okay. So today we've got the Doctors of Tinian. I'm so excited to dive into this work with you, and I feel like it brings up a lot of questions that I can't wait to get into. Really, really juicy. At this point, I am trusting that those folks who want to be doing the work have found partners who they can do the work with. And again, email me if you still do not have a step partner at this point. I know in my announcement for the call-in number for today, I also put in a little key in there about some suggestions for words to use to substitute out for alcoholic or drunk or things like that. That was just like a very quick sample. Even as I was going through the doctor's opinion today, I like new words and things came up. So I feel like it's going to come down to each one of us going through and finding those words that most resonate with what our experience is, so that this can reflect our own experience. And as we go through today, you'll get a better sense of that. So we get to start with the set-aside prayer of the physical. We are now in the physical. We are now officially doing the seal in the first step. So if you want to join me for the set-aside prayer, and then we're going to go into just a five-minute period of meditation, and I encourage you during that time to consider what you just prayed. Consider, you know, please help me see the truth, really, about my craving after I start to eat, because I feel like that is, for a lot of us, that's a new way of considering this dis-ease that we have. So if you'll join me, God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about my physical craving after I start to eat or act out around food and my body. And we'll go into 5 minutes of meditation.
okay. So, as we spoke about last time and the time before, that we have this three-part dis-ease, this separation from health. And we have this disease in our physical being, so in our the way that we are with food or when we're restricting from food after we start to act out. And then we have this disease that shows up in our mental, and we're going to talk about that in the coming weeks, and then we're going to talk about how it shows up in the spiritual. And that's why our recovery program has to treat the physical and the mental and the spiritual. And that's where we get the circle and the triangle. That's where we get these three parts that are going to treat these three areas of my condition. And so we start just with the physical, and we kind of disregard the other two for right now. And we're just going to look at this piece for the next couple of weeks. And start to, like, invite yourself to start to notice what happens in your body when you eat. Or for those people who are restrictors, when you skip a meal, notice what happens in your body. I was actually speaking with one of my sponsees last night, and she's a recovered anorexic. And I've always found when I'm working with folks that the bulimic is a lot like the compulsive overeater, because there's an aspect of bulimia that is compulsive eating, and so there's some crossover with that experience. And I find that that anorexia just shows up differently. The physical craving is different. It looks a little bit different. And so I was so curious what that looked like for her, and started asking her questions. And I'm going to share more about what she told me in one part of our reading today. But it really is fascinating. Like, I encourage you to start noticing in your own body what happens. And then also asking people around you, both in program and people who you consider to be normies with food, like, what happens for them? And do they experience this phenomenon of craving that we're going to learn a little bit more about today? Because it just blows my mind that some people just don't have that. We'll talk more about that. So who is the doctor's opinion? We get this guy, William D. Silkworth, and we've learned a little bit about him from the forward to the second edition, where he was the one who Bill Wilson was working with, and he was the one who said, no, Bill, because Bill was going around, remember, and was preaching to people, trying to save them, essentially, and Dr. Silkworth was like, no, you can't preach at people. You've got to, with the solution, you know, you can't just, like, bash them over the head with this, you know, I found religion thing. That's not going to work. You've got to get at them from explaining to them what's really wrong with them, from helping them to see their physical and their mental ailment. They've got to see that. Otherwise, they're not going to pursue the spiritual part of it. And so he was the one that said, this is vital. And that's what Bill was able to bring to Bob, who had the piece of ego deflation, you know. And so they put those two things together, and that's where we get the 12 steps, and that's where we get the magic of what those two experiences can create. And so it's really, really important for us fully understand what's wrong with us. So this guy, back in the 1930s, he was originally, like, unemployed or something, and then he finally found this job, this Dr. Silkworth, and he started working with alcoholics
And he worked with thousands and thousands of alcoholics over his lifetime, and they consider him a medical saint because he was the first one who identified that there's something more than just, it's not just a matter of mental control. Because up until that point, they didn't know what to do with alcoholics, right? They would just like put them in a straitjacket and they would, you know, just send them off to the crazy bin. But he was able to see this physical craving, that there's something beyond just a mental thing. And so as we look at this, and we're looking at it not from alcohol, we're looking at it from our food experience, I have to now start to write in the words that are going to help to take this out of the alcohol world and put it in my world right now, which is the world of food and body obsession and overeating or undereating and all that kind of stuff. And so I, from the very first line, from the very first sentence, I crossed out the word alcoholics. But I would say we of either Overeaters Anonymous or Food Addicts Anonymous or Eating Disorders Anonymous believe that the reader will be interested in the medical estimate of the plan of recovery described in this book. What I'm going to do today, because my hope is that you have gotten together with your step partner, the two of you have read out loud this whole chapter together, and you've already read each other your answers to the Idiot's Guide questions and had conversation about it, and already seen a lot of already gained a lot of insight about yourself and about this process. So what I'm going to just do is just highlight a few areas that really stand out to me as areas that I just want to bring some more conversation to. And I hope as you're listening that you maybe jot down a couple notes or something so that when we do open the call for free sharing and for questions and things like that, that you can bring some of this stuff up, even if it's a question. So right now, and I'm just going to not be fancy and say the numbers of the pages, like, you know, we've got 25 here. I'm just going to say XXV. Okay, so at the three lines up from the bottom on page XXV, we have that sentence that hopefully you've transcribed into a question. So am I the type with whom other methods I've tried have completely failed? Right? So there's this guy who's pretty much saying that he witnessed was Bill Wilson coming to him and saying, something's changed in me. Something's changed in me. And the doctor said, you're right. Something has changed in you. You're different. Why don't we go tell all the other patients what you've done? I mean, it's just absolutely incredible that that's what this doctor did. Instead of saying, you're crazy, and sending him to, you know, a loony bin. So as we read through here, so I get down to this, I personally know scores of cases of the type with whom other methods have failed completely. And so I get to ask myself that question, have other methods failed me completely? And, I mean, in my own experience, yes. I mean, I've done diets, and I've done diet pills, I've done diuretics, and I've done laxatives, and I've tried to change my eating, and I've eaten by my blood type, and I've eaten, you know, paleo, and I've done all these different kinds of things, and I have done self-help books, and I have, you know, tried being in a relationship. Maybe that'll control my eating, and I have tried being single. Maybe that'll control my eating, and I have gone to therapy, and I have, you know, like, the list is endless, all the things that I have done. I've done plenty of drugs to try to curb my appetite. I mean, that's what, you know, a big thing for me was using drugs and uppers and Coke to try to curb my appetite, coffee, things like that. So I got to get to a place in this work where I'm out of options. So we transcribe that question, is there anything else that I can do? Is there anything else that I can do that I haven't tried? Does my mind still think there's something that I can do And am I going to hold on to that? And am I going to not fully give myself over to this program because I still think that there's something, a little trick up my sleeve that I haven't yet tried? And then, so we get this, so I'm just going to start to read actually a lot of the next page because there's a lot in here that I want to share about. So at the next page, XXVI, the physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered compulsive overeating or undereating, restricting, binging, you put in whichever word works for you, torture, must believe. So we get a lot of musts in this 12-step process. In fact, I think in the first 103 pages where the 12 steps are, there's 64 musts. And I think that the most amount of musts actually appear in the doctor's opinion. So there's only one must that we have when we want to become members of a 12-step program. You know, and to, the desire to stop, right? And so they're pretty much making this distinction that just that one must, like I must be wanting to desire to stop in order to be able to be a member of this group, that's not going to be enough for me to be able to complete the process of recovery as outlined in the big book here. I'm going to need to do more things than just show up to meetings. Or just, to, you know, but whatever the minimum is to become a member, I'm going to have to do more in order to actually become recovered. So the first must, we must believe that the body of a compulsive overeater or undereater is quite as abnormal as her mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our eating or restricting just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality or were outright mental defective. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In this belief, any picture of the overeater, undereater, which leaves out this physical factor, is incomplete. There's a lot of stuff in there. So have I been working with an incomplete understanding of my disease? Have I only been seeing this as a mental issue? Have I only been seeing this as an emotional issue? Have I not actually fully seen that there is a physical component to this? So when I just want to bring this up, when I was speaking with this sponsee, I was asking her about this, like, what happens in your body, like, because you're not putting food into your body, and so I wanted to understand, what is that, what happens to you, and she said that she gets a high from, she gets lightheaded in her body when she skips a meal, and it gives her an adrenaline rush, and she gets a high from that, like, starving in her body. So there's actually like a physical thing that happens in her body even though she's skipping a meal. And I have to look at what happens in my physical body, and I have to look at how I love to feel full, even though feeling full also makes me feel guilty, and that's a whole other thing that takes me down like this like spiral. But like I feel anxious if I'm hungry. I feel like I need to put something in my body, and the actual act of eating is very, very pleasurable to me. And I absolutely have this physical, I start to eat, like I eat and I want to eat more. Eating makes me want to eat more. I put that food in my body, it passes my lips, and I want more. And we're going to dive into a little bit more about that because some of you might be just that way with sugar and some of you might be just that way with certain trigger foods. In my experience, I am that way with all food. Like, I need God to be with me in every bite I need to be in a spiritual, I need to be spiritually fit in order to actually eat. So a little bit further down here, then it's saying that the doctor's theory that I have an allergy to food and to not eating interests me. Does it? So we turn that into a question. Does it interest me? As lay people, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem over and under eaters, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things which we cannot otherwise explain. So we get this term of an allergy. And we get we define what an allergy is in our transcribing at the bottom of the page. It's a condition of unusual sensitivity to a substance, which in like amounts does not affect others and is characterized by systematic disorders. So you got to think about back in the day when they were writing this. You know, this is like before, I mean, I feel like these days we can say, oh, yeah, I'm allergic to this, I'm allergic to that, and I've got a pill for this, and my doctor gives me a pill for that, and, you know, I sneeze when I'm in certain, you know, like around flowers, and I have a dust, and, you know, allergy, but I take this for that, and I take this. But, like, back then, you know, you had an allergy, like certain allergies. If you were allergic to something and you maybe had that in your food, like, that could be fatal. And so an allergy is something that's actually very, very serious. And can I see that I actually have an allergic reaction, that I put this in my body, I put this acting out behavior, whether it's overeating or skipping a meal or over-exercising or purging, that I do this thing and I actually develop a craving to do more. Can I see that for myself? Can I see that in my history? And it continues. So we work out our solution on the spiritual as well as an altruistic plane. We favor hospitalization for the overeater, undereater who is very jittery, herby, fogged. And I do want to, I know that I have done a little bit of maybe one could even consider it a bashing of the treatment center, you know, of treatment centers in general. But I also want to share that this sponsee of mine, this recovered anorexic, she had an incredible experience at her treatment facility, and a lot of the tools that she developed while she was there help her today. So I know that there are aspects to some treatment centers that are incredibly helpful for some people, and so that might need to be a solution for someone if going into treatment. So we get on, I just want to make sure, I'm writing, I have all these notes down, so I just want to make sure I'm getting to everything. Yeah, okay, good. So on the next page, there's a really important paragraph right in the middle of the page, and I feel like this is one of the reasons why I'm so grateful for the Big Book Awakening, because if I wasn't going through and transcribing the way the Big Book Awakening suggests that I do, then I would read over this paragraph. It wouldn't land for me. Like, I wouldn't really get it. And I would just kind of think that they're talking about needing to have better morals. And that's one of the things that I shame myself for anyway, is like, why can't you just eat like other people do? Like, why do you have these really, you know, like, why are you such an animal? Why are you so out of control? Like, why can't you just control things? Why can't you just not have a problem with this? What's wrong with you? And so this paragraph that we get that starts with "we doctors," so I'm going to read it the way that it's written in the book, and then I'm going to read it the way that we actually transcribe it, and we'll talk about that. So we doctors have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to compulsive overeaters and undereaters, but its application presented difficulties beyond our conception. What with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. So they talk about this moral psychology thing here, and that just makes me feel like it's about my brain and it's about my lack of morals. And that makes me feel bad. And I already feel bad. I've got a complex about being bad. And so I'm now even badder, and they just told me that in the book, and fuck you very much, and I don't need this program. So when I get in there and I see that when they say moral psychology, what they really mean is a spiritual experience. And when they're saying ours, what they're really talking about is a doctor's, and this doctor is pretty much saying, as a human being, as a doctor, I can't make a dent in this. And when they're talking about the powers of good, what they really mean are the powers of God, then it reads like this. We doctors have realized for a long time that some form of spiritual experience was of urgent importance to chronic overeaters and undereaters. This application presented difficulties beyond a doctor's conception. What with a doctor's ultra-modern standards, a doctor's scientific approach to everything, doctors are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of God that lie outside a doctor's synthetic knowledge. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. That is so different. They're not saying that I'm bad. They're saying that a doctor is inadequate. And inadequate in the way that only God can be adequate. Because I'm going to come to find that no human aid, including my own reason, including my just going to meetings, right? Like nothing, no human, including my sponsor, no human aid is going to be able to fix me. Only God can. Only a vital spiritual experience is going to be able to take me to the other side. And that's what they're saying here. And that is so powerful. So flipping to the next page, we have another really rich, juicy paragraph at the top of the page here. So I'm going to kind of break this one down a little bit because there's so much here. So we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the reaction of food or of skipping a meal on these chronic compulsive over or under eaters is a manifestation of an allergy. Okay, so they're talking about a reaction. So can I see that? Can I see that I have this reaction? And can I see that it's an actual allergy? And, I mean, for me personally, I have a craving for more once I put that first bite in my body. And like I said, eating makes me want to eat. I can overeat on anything from the most obvious things, like desserts and chocolate to cereal and oatmeal and nuts and butter, like nut butters and seed butters and fruit, and I can overeat on steamed greens. I can overeat on meat like chicken and fish and red meat. I can overeat on diet foods. I can overdrink on tea. Like I can binge on tea and beverages and things like that. I can overeat gum. I can overeat artificial sweetener. Like I went on such a massive run for years and years. And it's funny because I say that I don't have a sugar addiction. And I don't know why I got this is how the sugar addiction struck me. I love sweet. I just don't like the taste of sugar. And so what that meant for me was I put fake sweetener on everything. And then I switched to stevia, which was like the healthy version of like all of those unhealthy artificial sweeteners. And I was addicted. I mean, it was crazy, and it was creating stomach problems for me. And I couldn't stop, and this process removed all of that. I don't do that anymore. But like being full for me doesn't ever indicate that I should stop eating. Like when I'm not connected, I should say. Like if I'm just in like talking like from the place of like my full on dis-ease, like being full has no consequence of whether or not I should stop. And it says that this phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate eater. So this is where it becomes so freaking fascinating to go and talk to all of the normies out there. I think I've mentioned this story before, but I'll mention it again. But this ex-boyfriend that I had, where like we would be going to our favorite restaurant together, and he would be eating his favorite meal, and then he would just like stop when he was full. And I could not understand. Like, I could not understand that. Like that is not how I eat. Like I eat everything on my plate, and then I still maybe want more. I oftentimes finish a meal and I'm like, if someone told me that I didn't eat and put another plate of food in front of me and like said, like, here you go, here's your meal, like I could probably eat an entire second meal. And I am so clear that is what I do unless God intercepts that path. Like, if I'm connected to God, I don't overeat. I finish a meal, I feel satiated. It's really weird. And, like, sometimes, you know, depending on, like, where I am, like, if I'm, like, in, like, shaky territory in terms of maybe I'm feeling really emotionally raw or something, or just, I don't even know. Let me not even pretend that I even know why. But sometimes I'll get, like, food in me, and I can feel that desire of, like, yeah, I could probably I could want to continue eating here, and I will bring God into that, like, meal as I'm eating. God, please, please show me what peaceful eating is. Please keep me sane and fill me with your love. Help me feel nourished by your love. And it helps me. You know, God, please guide my thoughts and actions. It really, really helps me. So a story for you. So the other night I was having dinner with my best friend, and we were talking intimately about relationships and about ex-relationships and what we were both calling in terms of lovership and relationship. And our conversation brought up a lot of pain and sadness and loneliness, that I felt. And a lot of vulnerability. And I started to, like, we were eating our meal, and it was a really, really delicious meal. And I don't know, like, if you ever have that experience where, like, you get your plate, and you look at the portion of food that's on your plate, and you're like, are they kidding me? Like, I could have, like, four of these. And it was, like, that kind of experience. And I was actually really enjoying the food. And so I finished eating, and we were still in this conversation, and I just noticed that I wanted to continue. Like, I wanted to have a whole other meal. I wanted her to say, oh, fuck it, let's just order every dessert on the menu, and, I just wanted to go for it. And I noticed myself toggling back and forth from being in the conversation with her to then thinking about food. And, you know, and I know that we're not focusing so much on the mental part, but I guess I share that because putting that food in my body activated my allergy and my craving for more. And I wanted chocolate. I wanted another meal. And it was really, really interesting because I now know you know, I'm continually getting the, like, I'm continually fine-tuning my program. And I realized in that conversation, I didn't end up overeating, by the way. I noticed in that conversation that I need to bring God in. Like, I can't, okay, a couple things. I've got to really be responsible about what I discuss while I'm eating. Like, this is such a perfect example of how I am not like other people. Like, other people might be able to sit down with their best friend over, like, you know, a great dinner and talk about really raw, deep emotional stuff. And that might be an incredible experience for them. And for me, it's shaky territory. There's too much, like, trigger there. And that might not have always be there for me. But for today, what I got to see was, wow, there were levels that I needed to bring God deeper into my experience that evening that I didn't, because I was arrogant. Like, I didn't think that I needed that much God. And I guess I needed more God working in my life in that moment. And so what that could have looked like instead was saying a prayer, like, before starting that meal, which I didn't do. I mean, we said a general grace, but that doesn't suffice for me anymore. And that's another thing that I learned. Like, does a general grace that works for other people, like, does that work for me? Or do I need to privately or out loud say another kind of prayer that is more directed at how I need God to help me, like, guide my thoughts and actions and show me what peaceful eating is in the embodied experience of eating. So I got to learn a lot. And that, for me, is how we get to navigate this path with God and walk hand in hand and not just go down a shame spiral of how bad I am because I had a thought. Like, I heard someone sharing with me, and I can't remember who it was, but someone was sharing with me that with her sponsor, that it was grounds for, like, firing her, or it was considered a relapse if she had a food thought. And I have so much compassion both for her and for that sponsor in that moment, because, gosh, I don't know that I could work with such a strict way that would be really, really difficult for me. Like, I need more compassion so that I can continue to grow and navigate and be guided and not shame myself. So this phenomenon of craving is limited to this class only, never occurs into the average temperate eater. These allergic types, okay, so this is, let me actually, before I go into this next sentence, which I'm sure people have some questions about, they're pretty much saying in that if it never occurs in them, this phenomenon of craving, and it ever occurs in me, I am not like them. That's what I learned right there. Okay. Like, when it comes to food, I am not like other people. So that's important for me to know. Okay. So these allergic types can never safely, so some of us might have read this, like, can never safely use food in any form of all. Safely use food in any form of all, form at all. And they're like, well, that doesn't make sense, and this is stupid. So let me share with you how I read that. Because there's so many different ways to say that. So can never safely, for me, it would be to safely, without God, use food in any form of all, at all, because that is my truth. Like, without God, I cannot use food safely. It doesn't mean that every single time it's going to go completely out of control, but that I just never know when it might go out of control. And so it's not safe. So for me, without God, so that's how I interpret that. The sponsee who I was talking to said she can never safely diet or restrict. Some of us might put in there safely, you know, eat that trigger food or safely act out in, you know, with their behavior. I can never safely, but, you know, whatever that thing is, there is a way to say this so that the experience actually resonates with you and isn't alienating you, like, oh, well, they can't mean food. And if you have questions about that or want to talk about that and the words that you do use or the words that you are using, I would love to hear about that when we open up the call, because your, like, what works for you will work for other people. And once having formed the habit, Have I noticed that this is something that has become a habit and found that they cannot break it? Once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. So in any form at all, can never safely use this in any form at all. That can mean the different types of foods, you know, like some folks who are, I mean, I know for me, like, I can't have dairy in any form at all. I can't have any gluten in any form at all. Like, that is absolute, like, my system just completely breaks out. Like, it just doesn't work for me in any form at all. But we can also take it outside of the food conversation or even outside of the acting out around food conversation. And we can look at any form at all, also applying to alcohol and drugs and shopping and spending and cluttering and creating chaos and gambling and sex and love addiction and codependency and workaholism. You know, we can look at all the ways in any form at all. Can I safely do any of those things without the help of God in my life? So this can actually really expand into quite a big question. And have I lost my self-confidence? I mean, for me, like, yeah, because I can't trust myself. I can't trust my gut. I can't trust my intuition. And so I've lost my self-confidence. Because I keep on saying that I don't want to be like this, and yet I keep on being like this. And you know, my jaw, like, I reached a place. I was such a chronic gum chewer. I got, like, pretty bad, and I was a clencher, like, I had bad TMJ and things like that for a long, long time, and I experienced, like, a lot of inflammation in my jaw, like, a little pain. It was painful because of how much gum chewing and then eating I was doing. Like, there was just this constant need to have something in my mouth. I was drinking tea, or I was chewing gum, or I was eating something, and there was just constant movement in my jaw. And I reached a place where I remember there was actually a week or so where I couldn't actually eat because of pain in my jaw. And I had to just eat soft foods. That was the place that it got me to. So this is, like, very physical, very, very physical. And I still couldn't stop. Like, that wasn't grounds for me to stop overeating. I was still overeating, even with that, and just trying to get creative with how I could get food in me without having to chew. So I know I'm the real deal here. but my problems pile up on me. I mean, think about life. Like, I'm fighting with people. When I'm in my disease, like, I am fighting with people. I am antisocial. Antisocial in that I isolate, and then antisocial just in, like, I'm contrary, I'm critical, I'm judgmental, I feel separate, I feel victimized, you know, I check out, I'm checked out. Like, you're spending time with me, you think that we're building a relationship, and I am in another dimension. I'm irresponsible. Like, I'm not here. I'm destructive. I'm unpredictable. I'm ineffective. Like, I can't handle life. So yes, my problems are going to pile up on me. You know, bills might pile up, or I might. I know we have a couple clutterers on the phone call. I might experience just this clutter all around in my environment. Like, maybe I am putting on a lot of weight and I'm having a lot of medical issues. Or maybe I'm restricting so much, but I have a lot of medical issues. So the list goes on and on. And can I see that? Can I see that in my life? And I really invite you to take a moment and notice that that's true for you. Because if those bottom three lines are true for you, it means that the top of this paragraph is also true about you. And so just take a moment and let that sink in, that this actually might be speaking about you. And so then we get frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. And what does frothy mean? Again, we get a definition, so it lets me know that it's this light or insignificant, this kind of worthless-natured conversation. And so have I had, you know, frothy emotional appeal to myself? Have I appealed to myself? Deb, will you, you know, straighten your act out? Why can't you just get it together? Why can't you just stick to that diet plan? Why did you stop, you know, going to that nutritionist? Why did you go back and why did you buy that stuff? Why, you know, it's like I go and I try to straighten myself out. One of the things that I did a lot to myself, and in my sick disease, like, I actually used to wish that I still had this level of what I thought was discipline. But I would intentionally, like, I remember when I was in my late teens, I would intentionally speak really, really horribly to myself and be really, really judgmental and really critical and really shaming to try to discipline me, to discipline myself and to try to have better control, because I thought it was just a lack of control. And so I'd be really, really intentionally mean to myself to try almost like, and I was chatting with one of our participants before the meeting started, and she mentioned being a slave driver. And I actually, I don't know if she's on the call or not, but Patty, I wanted to let you know that I just actually wrote a poem that's called Slave Quarter. And so this is a complete aside, but I've been writing a lot of poetry about my addiction, and I would like to share those poems with you all. So maybe I'll send you like one or two, and if you like them, then I'll send you more. But it's just stuff that just streams through, and I feel like a lot of you might relate to what it's sharing. And so have you been that to yourself? Have you been a slave driver? And has your body been a slave quarter? The message which can interest and hold these chronic over and under eating people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. Okay, depth and weight. So, before I move on, I just want to also, as it relates to frothy emotional appeal, there's the appeal that I give myself, and then there's the appeal that other people might have given me, and I do feel like it is valuable to take a moment and just consider the one person or the couple of people who've been the most affected by the way that you act out around food in your body. And allowing that to hurt if it does, you know, feeling that, because we allow our hearts to open when we allow ourselves to feel that, wow, there's actually been a massive impact on other people. And so then we get this idea of depth and weight, and I have to ask myself, am I carrying a message of depth and weight? Am I hearing a message of depth and weight? And am I carrying a message of depth and weight? And I encourage us to hold each other to a higher standard of recovery. Like, let's lead everyone that we work with through this process so that they can find their own truth. Because a lot of people are finding these meetings and they're just immediately, you know, they think that they're an overeater or an undereater. They think they have this thing. They think that they're the real deal. They think that they're a hopeless case. They don't know. And we just slap the label on them, and they slap it on themselves, and then they just start doing the steps. And the process that we're going to be going through and that we started going through is actually a process that helps us find our own truth. We're going to be going through, and we're actually going to get to a place where we get to define, am I the real deal? Do I need this spiritual program of recovery? Or will a psychological approach help me? Can I just work with a trainer and a nutritionist? You know, do I just need to get my act in gear? And do I not need to actually do this program? And carrying a message of depth and weight means that I have to be armed with facts about my disease. And so I need to know what the three aspects of my disease are. I need to fully understand that, and then I need to go through this process and have a spiritual experience so that I can take my awakened spirit out there into the world and be of service taking other people through. And so for me, that's what I'm committed to. And I'm committed to doing that process of depth and weight. I'm committed to carrying that message of depth and weight, and I'm also committed to contributing to, like, the world at large and sharing a message of depth and weight so that more people across the world can also carry that, and we can really, really raise the standard of food and body recovery worldwide. So at the bottom of this page, we get this paragraph, which you'll probably refer to again and again. I do have another note here that I want to talk about. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. And another way that we get to read that, because we just transcribe it, this is a promise. So it's telling me if my ideals are grounded in a power greater than myself, my life will be recreated. And isn't that what we've just wanted? You know, just like a paragraph earlier, we talk about these problems piling up on ourselves. And now here, they're saying that this program is going to recreate, the power that I find through this process is going to recreate my life. That is amazing. That's an amazing promise. And I have had that experience over and over again as well. Okay, so at the bottom here, we get this paragraph. Men and women overeat or skip meals, essentially, or purge or act out around food because they like the effect produced by it. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is hurting me, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. So what does this word elusive mean? It means hard to understand or define or remember. The sensation is so hard to understand or define or remember that while I admit that it is hurting me, I can't after a time differentiate the true from the false. My life seems the only normal one to me, right? It's like the first time that I did cocaine, in order to curb my appetite, I was scared. I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I was a little thrilled. It was like a big, big deal. By the 10th time, or the 100th time, or the 1,000th time, you know, like it was just, that was just what I did. It was like, duh. I mean, I couldn't imagine not doing that. I couldn't imagine that not being a part of how I live my life. And there's a million examples like that. That's just one. Cannot differentiate the true from the false. So that's out here in my life. I can't tell what's real and what's not real. And that's also inside of my mind. I can't tell what's real and what's not real. Like, outside my life, I look at food on my plate, I go to a restaurant, and it looks like it's not enough. Even though I know statistically, you know, that like restaurants, their serving size as well depends. You know, you go to a really fancy restaurant and they do give you like 3 ounces of meat. But I mean, like at a lot of restaurants, like the portion size, they're actually much bigger than what an actual portion size would be if I was like weighing and measuring at home. And yet I look at that food and it looks like not enough to me, because I see the world through a lens of not enough or too much, right? And then I also have to look at that I cannot differentiate the true from the false inside of my head, you know, inside of me, because I can rationalize and I can justify and I can victimize with the best of them, you know, in order to give myself reason to act out. And so this is huge. I have to get really, really clear that I'm in delusion, and I don't even know what's the true from the false. Okay. They are restless, irritable, and discontented. Am I restless, irritable, and discontented? Am I uneasy and easily annoyed and never satisfied? Like, when I am not running on God's power, I am absolutely, this is my MO. I wake up this way. I mean, I have family members and boyfriends and whatever who are like, you wake up and I don't know who you're going to be each day. And I feel that about myself. I can wake up and I can just be irritable. I'm just irritable. I'm just irritated. I'm easily annoyed. Stop making all that noise, you know? And so I have to see this. This is the description of me in an untreated state. And this is me in, you know, even if I have quote-unquote abstinence, which we're going to talk about abstinence in a few moments, but even if I'm like eating according to a specific food plan type of abstinence, am I still experiencing restlessness, irritability, and discontentment? You know, because that's an indication of my spiritual dis-ease. And so unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few compulsive bites or by acting out and not eating. Acts which they see other people doing with impunity, without consequence. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to do it again. This is repeated over and over again, and unless a person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of her recovery. Ease and comfort. Can I see that I get ease and comfort from acting out? You know, it's easy to see sometimes because I actually experience ease and comfort. But sometimes, and I've talked with enough of you to know, that some of you read this and you're like, well, it doesn't feel good when I'm binging, or it doesn't feel good when I'm acting out in a certain way. It actually doesn't feel good. But I'm still doing it. And what I had to see in my own experience, because sometimes, yeah, I am eating, and I'm eating rushed, and I'm eating shamefully, and I'm, you know, and I'm like, this isn't easy and comfortable. This feels horrible. But it's doing the job nonetheless, because it's distracting me from whatever else was underneath that behavior that I didn't want to feel. And maybe what was underneath that was pain. Maybe it was loneliness. Maybe it was sadness. Or maybe I was feeling weak or hurt or vulnerable or, God forbid, out of control. And eating or obsessing or skipping a meal or acting out allows me to deal with life. And so I find that in one way or another, I do get ease and comfort from acting out. And so the transcription that we get is, do I see that in recovery, I need to experience that sense of ease and comfort if I'm going to give up the desire to act out? Like, I need to find whatever I've been seeking in my dis-ease, whatever power I think I've been getting or whatever relief I've been getting from life, I need to find that in my program. Otherwise, I'm not going to stick to this program. Like, why would I? And I'm really clear, you know, they talk about an entire psychic change. I'm really clear that I need something to come between me and that next compulsive bite. Because the next compulsive bite will just happen. And unless like a power works in my life to stop that. And that's what I have to see. And it doesn't matter how much abstinence time that I have or how much time I have away from certain behaviors or how many workshops I've led or how many times I've done the BBA work or how many sponsees I have or how many times I call my sponsor or how many times I speak at the podium. Like, none of that matters, you know. I'm one bite away from acting out if I don't have God in my life. And so I need my life. I need my God to recreate me. And that's my truth. Like, I need this program, and I'm desperate for the solution in this program. And I have experienced so much recovery, and I continue to learn and grow. A little bit further down on this page, so we're now on XXIX. So it says, faced with this problem, if a doctor is honest with himself, he must sometimes feel his own inadequacy, and we talked about that already. Although he gives all that is in him, it is often not enough. One feels something more than human power is needed to produce the essential psychic change. And that is my only answer. Right. So it keeps on emphasizing, you need a psychic change, you need a spiritual experience, your life is going to be recreated, and a doctor cannot do it, human aid cannot do it, and we're going to start to make a list, and you can start to just make a list on your own, like human aid, draw a line, and then just start to write all the things of human aid that we're going to start to realize can't fix me. So we know that doctors can't fix me. And then a little bit further down here, it says, in that same paragraph, it said, many types do not respond to the ordinary psychological approach. So there are some people with whom the ordinary psychological approach will work. And that might be you. That's not me. I know that that's not me because that hasn't been my experience. And so I need this thing that they're talking about in the book. And what I also need to do is not compare myself to the people who the ordinary psychological approach does work for. Because I have friends who are therapists, who have therapists, who have just done yoga, who have, you know, they've done other things. They just decided to be different, you know, like, they went to Landmark, they went to some kind of personal development program, and it worked for them. And that's awesome. And I can go down a shame spiral, if I am in a guilt spiral, if I'm comparing myself to them, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do it like that? Why am I so complicated? Why am I so difficult? Why am I so bad? Why am I so broken? It's like we have two different ailments. It's like I have diabetes and my friend has asthma and she gets an inhaler and I'm trying to take an inhaler and I'm like, why isn't this working for me? It's like that, like, because I'm treating it with the wrong thing, and that's it. And at the bottom of this page, so we get this, again, we transcribe this into a question. So the bottom paragraph, do I believe my disease is entirely a problem of mental control? Like, is that what I've been believing this whole time? And, you know, this doctor is asking me that, and I'm needing to now ask myself that and look at this and say, do I relate to this? Do I relate to eating something or skipping a meal or so, like prior to an event or a date or some kind of occasion, and then the phenomenon of craving kicks in and I just decide, I just want to stay in and eat. Like, screw that. I'm going to cancel those plans. Oh, maybe they weren't that. I just said maybe I was going to go to that barbecue this afternoon, but I didn't actually, like, fully commit to it. Or I kind of only had, like, casual arrangements with this person. I'm going to say that I can't go to the movies tonight. Or I was going to call this person back, but I'm just going to pretend like I forgot because I really want to stay at home and just and binge and purge. Like, you know, did something else take over? And you just completely, it became paramount. It became more important than anything else. So that whatever else you were supposed to do, you just didn't do. You just completely wrote off. It just wasn't important. So if you relate to that, if that's ever happened in your history, what they're trying to let me know is that you're not doing that to just escape. You're doing that, acting out behavior to overcome a craving beyond your mental control. It's not about having bad morals, right? Like, this is actually a physical allergy that's going on in your body. And we share that, I share that, this book shares that, not so that it gives me more reason to dig my heels in and say, see, I'm sick, and I don't have to change, and fuck you, because I've got this, and so I get to stay in this. Like, that's not cool. Like, that's not what it's trying to say. This is more of, remember we talked about, like, the having the attitude of curiosity. Like, oh, so I've got this physical thing going on. Wow, that is so fascinating. So I actually have this ailment that has a physical component to it, that makes me do this, I actually don't have the power over. Okay, so what else is there for me to understand? Because I want to fully understand this so I fully understand what the treatment is going to do. And so then we get this description of the different types. And so we get this description of the psychopath. And I love that we have a description of the psychopath in here because it's really easy to say, oh, yeah, that psychopath over there who's in a mental ward, the psychopath who's emotionally unstable, right? But then we get this definition of what a psychopath is that our transcription allows us to do. I'm going to read it. A person characterized by emotional instability, lack of sound judgment, perverse and impulsive, often criminal behavior, inability to learn from experience, amoral and asocial feelings, and other serious personality defects. She may or may not have certain insane attacks or symptoms. Whoa. I think they're talking about me right there. That is, it's important for me to see that. Wow, I have some psychopathic tendencies. What else do I have? You know, am I always going on the wagon for keeps? Am I over-remorseful and make many resolutions but never a decision? Am I the type who's unwilling to admit that I don't have that I have a problem with food, or that I'm unwilling to admit that I need to eat, or that I'm too skinny, or that I, you know, like, am I unwilling to admit it? I plan various ways of eating and acting out. I change my brand. I change my diet, right? Or my environment, or the people that I hang out with. Am I that type? Am I the type who always believes that after being entirely free from my behavior or from certain foods for a period of time, that I can do whatever I want, that I can eat whatever I want, that I can behave however I want without danger? Am I that type? Because I have to look to see where, even though in my head I don't think I'm that type, I have to look to see where I'm showing up as that type in my life, where I'm resting on my laurels, where I'm being arrogant. And then the manic depressive type, who perhaps a whole, who's least understood and a whole chapter could be written about. And then they're the types that are entirely normal in every respect except where food and body is concerned. They're often able, intelligent, and friendly people. And can I see that there's an aspect that that's me too? Can I see that as well? So can I see myself in this? That's the whole point. All these and many others have one symptom in common. Here it is. They cannot start eating or abstaining from food without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy, which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. Is that me? It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. So it's not going to be cured, but it can be recovered. What do I have to do? The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Okay, so this question came up a lot from a bunch of you. What does that mean? I can't abstain from food. That's stupid. Some people are like, abstaining from food is my disease. So this is where you get to sit in meditation, and you get to ask, what does abstinence mean to me? You know, is it from overeating? Is it from restricting or binging or dieting? Is it from just acting out around food in my body? Is it abstinence from certain foods or from certain eating behaviors, eating in the car, standing up while eating, being rushed, night eating, binging, purging, calorie counting, body obsessing, all this kind of stuff. So this is just where we get to find our own truth. And abstinence might be something that changes and grows. It probably will change and grow with you. And the question that I have here is, can I do that on my own? And my experience is that I can't do that on my own. And so that's where creating a plan of eating this early in the work and then shaming myself for not being able to stick to it, I can't do it on my own. They just told me that human aid can't work. So, like, you know, it's one of those things where, yes, if I sit in meditation and I say, hey, God, like, show me what peaceful eating is, and then I get guidance, and then I'm trying to live into that, I'm trying to do that, and I sit down at meals, and I'm trying to bring that in. God, please show me what peaceful eating looks like in this moment. And if I'm still struggling in that, if I'm truly authentically bringing that prayer in and I'm struggling and everything, I get that. That might be true. We're at the beginning of the work. We haven't gotten unblocked yet. So that those prayers might fully penetrate and be effective. I totally understand that. Does it mean that you don't go on the inquiry? No, I don't think that's the answer either. I think that we do want to ask this question, and we want to start to get a sense of what freedom might feel like and what we're growing towards. But holding ourselves to some kind of very strict diet and then shaming ourselves or getting fired by our sponsors or this kind of stuff, if we're not able to stick to that to a T, I just, that doesn't feel like it would be super supportive for me for my recovery. So that's not how I sponsor. So in terms of what I personally feel called to share as it relates to this chapter, that's what I feel called to share. I'd love to at this point open up the phone call for some questions. And I would like to go in also into some of the Idiot's Guide questions and maybe posing some questions that that we can, you know, that a few people can answer what they wrote and we can have a conversation about it. So go ahead and unmute yourself if you want to share. And I'm going to start with a question, and you can either share on that question, or you can ask your own question, or you can just make a share. So I'm going to start with the number one question. Number one from the Idiot's Guide: are you the type of compulsive eater, food addict, or undereater who failed completely with other methods of trying to stay permanently abstinent or trying to control your compulsive eating, binging, purging, restricting, and overexercising? What have you tried? Go ahead and unmute yourself if you want to share.
Hi, Debbie. It's Cami from Visalia.
Hey, Cami.
Wow. Can I just tell you, I am blown away by every word that has come out of your mouth today, and I'm overwhelmed with relating to you and feeling like, I mean, I just have been sitting here saying, wow, and I want to say thank you so much for being just like me and making me not feel so alone, and I want to share what my ego did while I was listening to you. Was it kind of made me feel like I've gotten attached to this thing that nobody understands, and I'm all alone, and it's gotten into this comfortable self-pity place. And knowing how not alone specifically in certain behaviors and everything that you said today, how not alone I am, my ego was kind of like, oh, there's no more excuse to sit in self-pity. And I just, everything, the gum chewing, the oatmeal, the stevia, the sugar, everything that you shared, you've talked about me and my story and my life, and I'm just kind of in shock about it. And I am the real deal. I mean, I had like infected gums and infected teeth, and I had three teeth pulled. It was so painful throughout my infected teeth experience that I was on pain pills, which I don't have an addiction to. And I still kept binging and purging, and I still kept trying to find ways to eat and feed myself when I was in so much pain that my mouth couldn't even take it anymore, that I was in tears. I still found a way to act out in my disease, and I'm just remembering how insane that's been and how you overeat. I mean, I've really been struggling with that question within myself. What are my foods that I have a physical allergy to? And I can overeat salad. I can binge and purge on a salad. And that was really interesting for me today. So I want to say thank you so much for everything and the conversations throughout the week. And I want to say thank you to my step partner for being willing to commit to me through this, because I struggled finding a commitment and a sponsor that I have, which is great. And in regards to you know, the physical allergy, this has come up for me a lot this week, and I am realizing that no matter what I do, I cannot separate myself from food long enough to get some distance between me and the physical allergy. It's being set off with every thought, with every bite, with everything,
And I relapsed, and I'm going to tell on myself, and I didn't really know if I was going to be able to share this today, but I took a diet pill, I think it was the day before yesterday, that I had carrying around with me for about 4 months, because I've been abstinent from that for 4 months. And for the past 4 months, I've been in my binge purge cycle, even through this work. Through this work, I've struggled with eating my way through my transcriptions, binging and purging my way through my meetings and my workshops. And I can't, and I am seeing so clearly how I cannot have an experience without getting some distance between me and my physical allergy. And the first thing I want to do when I sit down to my book work is eat. And I damn well do, all the way through. And and so I felt like I couldn't get any physical movement to my body, and I was stuck in this cycle. And so I mentally obsessed about it long enough to take my diet pill. And as horrible as that was, as far as what I'm trying to get freedom from, it gave me some, and I'm treading lightly by just sharing my experience, that it gave me some distance between me and my physical allergy and stopped this craving long enough for me to not binge and not purge now for 3 days. And I by no means am saying that that human aid of that pill has done anything for me, but that's just my experience, that it got me away from my physical allergy, and it felt like it was the only way I was going to be able to get away from it. And right, wrong, or indifferent, I don't know. That's just what happened. I consider it a relapse on diet pills, and I'm struggling with that again now too. But I have been able to give my body a rest and my mouth and my stomach a rest for 3 days and have some physical movement to my body. And And I know that, you know, it is what it is, and it's just a struggle. There's so many layers for me. There's so many layers to this for me. And I was able to sit down and not, and finally answer all these questions without eating my way through it and have a true experience with the work. And I'm grateful for that. And there was a lot of times that I was explaining to Jeffrey about my boyfriend about how there are reasons why I eat and binge and purge. There are reasons why I suffer from these things that I do. It's a physical allergy. It's a mental obsession. It's a spiritual malady. But when I don't do any of these things, I would have killed myself a long time ago, and I know that to be true from the bottom of my heart. If I didn't have these things to turn to for so many years, I would have taken myself out. And so getting away from the binging and the purging and the diet pills and all this other stuff is surfacing all the very reasons why I did them in the first place. And it's like having surgery without any Novocaine, you know? And I mean, my disease is acting out in all different ways. I had a procedure on my stomach because I have a lot of stomach problems, I'm sure, as many of us do. And it was a fasting procedure, and I had to fast. And I thought to myself, right on, I'll shrink my stomach and I'll be able to not eat because I'm not supposed to eat for this procedure. And then the medication they're going to give me is going to make me not want to eat. I went 24 hours without any food, and my disease eats that right up, no pun intended. And I just got to tell you that I am the real deal, and I am super grateful to be a part of this workshop and have this fellowship of people that that I can connect to that are me. And I'm sorry I've gone on and on. I'm going to share on question one. The things that I have tried have been mental control, self-knowledge, willpower, Weight Watchers, calorie counting, journaling, therapy, Overeaters Anonymous, Compulsive Overeaters Anonymous, Big Book, Anorexics and Bulimics, Big Book, Purging, Restricting, Jenny Craig, Relationships, School, A Course in Miracles, Deepak Chopra, Different Meditation Series, AA, NA, Al-Anon, Emotional Sobriety, Prayer and Meditation, Service Work, Swearing Off Forever, Dieting, Calling People When I Wanted to Eat, Anger and Rage, Manipulation, Giving Money and My Credit Cards to People to Hold for Me, Having People Shop with Me, Having People Stay the Night with Me and Sit with Me Through the Night, Playing the Tapes Through, and a lot I related to what you shared as well. And so that's all I have to share. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cammie. And there's something that you brought up that I want to make a note of, because it's so important that we
we have to see that the way we've been acting out hasn't been the problem. It's been the solution. Like we've been, that has been what we've been going to for our power. And it's almost like, thank you, food. Thank you, acting out behaviors. Thank you, disease, for carrying me through a time in my life maybe that I didn't have better tools as a survival tool. But I now have access to better tools that aren't going to kill me while they're also trying to save me. And so I'm going to go ahead and not need you anymore. I mean, that's kind of what we're doing in this process is we're essentially upgrading. We're upgrading our power system. So thank you so much for your share. Okay, who wants to share on the next question? Does a doctor's theory that you have an allergy, an abnormal reaction to food, explain why you cannot control how much you eat and act out around food once you start? What are some examples? You can either share about that or you can just share in general. Corey, are you on the call? Go ahead and star six yourself, unmute yourself. Do you want to share?
Debbie?
Hi.
Hi, honey. Yeah. I am on the call, but my baby's screaming right now, so it probably wouldn't be the best time to share.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Aww. A million times.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. No problem. Somebody else will take it. Hi, Deb. This is Laura. I'm called to share. I don't know.
Hi, Laura.
I'm called to share right now. Thank you so much. And I just want to say to everyone, I'm one of the people who actually was guided to come here when I asked for help with my cluttering and I guess in my chaos making. And I can truly see that with my prayers to my higher power and with an open and willing heart that there's no mistake, too, that I was brought to this program, and I've never been in any food programs or anything, and I've always kind of joked aside to the fact that I am addicted to sugar and, you know, that type of thing. But I just want to really express my gratitude for the gift of compassion and empathy that you hold, Deb, that allows us to be okay in our powerlessness and in our imperfection. And recognizing, I know for me, not just in the areas of clutter or chaos making or so many of the different areas that I struggle with, but even in my addiction to reaching for sweets and sugars and things that I've never addressed, you know, officially before. At one point, I did go for like the artificial sweeteners, and I literally did have an insanely difficult physical reaction with a certain kind of headache. And any time that I do have even the very slightest amount of artificial sweeteners, I can distinctly tell that that's what it is. But I ended up in the hospital because I had thought I was going to overcome the sugar and did all this artificial stuff, and I had a reaction that was able to stop me because of the pain of it. But what I want to say is I'm so grateful too in the way that you've presented everything with ultimately any of these addictions are all the underlying spiritual malady and how important that conscious contact and that we are completely powerless without that. And so allowing that grace and compassion to know I'm being courageous in even looking at these different aspects of my life and trusting in the process that the power will come, but it won't be coming from human, you know, it can come through human aid, through my higher power, in the workings in this process. But ultimately, the solution for me is through my higher power. And the thing that I had been struggling with prior to this, too, was getting little glimpses of being within the will of my higher power and feeling, and then my ego taking over and thinking, you know, taking credit for it and thinking, oh, I've got, you know, I figured this out, blah, blah, blah. And then when I would step back into either that disease thinking or behavior or anything, really spiraling out of control with even more insane thinking of beating myself up, of shaming and isolating and just really being horrible to myself, thinking that that is going to motivate me to become good, I think, was my thought, and not really recognizing that this is a disease and that it is progressive and that it only can be remedied through a spiritual solution. And I have to just say thank you so much for just in doing this small amount. I have felt a lot of letting go of some of that guilt and shame. And then the last thing I just want to say is I know I'd seen this somewhere, and I thought in the transcribing they were going to put in something for psychic change. And someone had told me a long time ago when I was going to do the BBA through a different workshop or something to get this big book dictionary, and under psychic it says mind / mentality of or pertaining to the human mind, soul, or spirit. And I've heard other people referring to the psychic change just as, you know, the spiritual awakening or that. I just didn't notice it in here, so I just wanted to mention that. And thank you so much for all your service, and I pass.
Thank you. No. Don't jump off the line yet, Laura. I'm really curious because I feel like there's something really unique about I think some of you know that I also, like the workshop that I'm currently doing right now, we're looking at food. Yeah, okay, good. We're looking at food and also chaos creating. So what Laura's talking about with the cluttering, I kind of interpret as creating chaos, and I think I mentioned on the first call that I consider the way that I act around food in my body to be part of that chaos, because it's essentially inviting in or creating this disturbance that separates me from God, and that is chaos. And in conversations that Laura and I have had, we've talked about clutter not just being what's in our environment, but also being what's in our head with those, you know, those delusions that we have going on, those fears and all those thoughts, but then also body clutter, like how I'm actually carrying extra baggage as it really, you know, like in i.e. weight on my body. And so so there's an absolute link and crossover. And I'm just curious if you spent much time, Laura, really looking at, so for question number four, when you put certain behaviors into your body, is there a craving for, do you actually experience a physical craving for more?
Yeah, and hold on one second. My son keeps saying, Mom, hold on one second.
Okay.
Deb, I can just answer my question that I wrote for number four, if that is helpful.
Okay.
And
okay.
And the question for everyone else, the one that I answered was the one, just, I'm sorry, hold on.
I'm on the phone, just a minute, please, just a minute.
Okay, the one that I answered was, when you put adrenaline into your body or start some chaos, is there a craving for more, and what happens to you? So essentially, the different internal hormones, which I heard Billy Kay, the Al-Anon chaos creating talk, and her discussing, you know, the stress hormones, cortisol, adrenaline, epinephrine, those type of things. I can absolutely relate to that, because for me, the definition of clutter is essentially unmade decision. And a lot of my clutter, quote-unquote, comes from fear of that I'm self-reliant and I have to take care of it and I might need it, so if I get rid of it, you know, that type of thing, not trusting that I will be provided for. And the anxiety sometimes that I experience with whether to give something away or the alternative, too, is in sometimes purchasing things thinking this is going to help, you know, this newest whatever is going to help with this or blah, blah, blah. So bringing things in and then releasing things that I no longer really love and serve. And so I'm not really able to honor the things that really do, I really do enjoy in my life. I just keep everything. And then I'm a victim of it. I'm trapped, and I'm not able to participate in life because I feel unworthy. I have to clean up. I have to do this. I have to do that all before. So it stops me from living life. So my question that I answered was, I get caught up like in an OCD spin, unable to think, panicky, spinning, trying to do too much at once, overdoing, pushing limits, racing around, trying to rush to do one more thing, or ignoring immediate needs, food, water, rest, consuming sugar, caffeine, not pausing or taking a deep breath, excessively talking, unable to ground myself, caught up in that fight or flight mode, the anxiety mode, stuck in victim mode, blaming others and asking, why is God doing this to me? And I put in here, not asking why is God doing this for me, just because in the beginning of my recovery, some of the time when God, you know, when I was feeling that, the time when I was really able to feel sometimes the uncomfortableness of some of the results or consequences of, you know, my actions, I was able to look at that and say, can I take this uncomfortable feeling as the invitation to draw closer to God, to seek God, and to ask for help and to recognize my powerlessness? And then in addition to that, I put not taking responsibility or accountability, blaming, it's easier to blame others for all that pain that I'm feeling in that moment if someone was criticizing me or trying to get me to move beyond that, shaming myself or believing that I can, like, whip myself into shape, as in, you know, if I can just get rid of all this stuff, but then getting into that panic state where I just get overwhelmed. And so for me, part of the beginning of that is recognizing the physical addiction to staying in that releasing of those internal hormones. And part of the payoff I recognized in doing this process is that a lot of times, let's say you're going to have a party or something, or you someone's coming to your house or something, and suddenly you've got piles of papers you haven't dealt with and piles of things that you haven't dealt with. And it's in the past, I've had a payoff, a power coming from getting myself into that state of procrastination to the point where all of a sudden I get a kick of all those adrenaline hormones and things, and then I go into hyper mode, you know, and I'm able to get a lot done. And in the past, that was a payoff because that was effective. If it was a term paper in school, or if it was forms that were difficult to fill out, or all kinds of things like that. But as my years of going through this type of, you know, disfocused thinking and distractibility and attentional things has progressed, the only thing that gets paid attention to is the things that are those emergency fires. So if for some reason it gets to, I didn't pay all my bills and then they turn off the electricity, suddenly, yeah, I better call and pay that. Or, you know, or even like, for example, we had it put up so it was on automatic bill pay. But I didn't open the letter that said the credit card we had or, you know, something, whatever it was. I just put it to the side. I didn't think it was of importance. It was in a pile to be dealt with later. And then later on I find out, oh, this was expired or something happened. And so that's just an example of something. But I saw where the payoff took in. Thank you, and I'm going to mute.
Thank you so much, Laura. Thank you so much for that. I got so much value out of that share. I hope that other people did too, because I feel like there's so much crossed over with the chaos that's experienced with the food and the chaos that's that you're describing right there. And so I just wanna thank you so much for everything that you just shared. I wanna ask if somebody wants to speak about the effect produced. So that number six question, did I compulsively eat, binge, purge, restrict, or overexercise for the effect produced? What are some examples? Or you can just share in general.
Hey, Debbie, it's Tammy.
Hey, Tammy.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So glad you're on the call.
Good stuff. I got a little late start. I apologize. So I'll have to go back and listen to the beginning. Anyway, I just wanted to share. There's some good stuff. The fact, I don't know. I had some, I met with my sponsor and went over my questions and did the big book and stuff. And there's so many ways my addiction with food and acting out really, it just goes in so many different directions. And one of the biggest ones that was a big aha for me was, and I've been doing it for almost three years, is I have this thing about going out to eat, and I feel very paralyzed by the idea of cooking, and I cooked all the time. I mean, I had a little one. When he turned 18, I stopped. And also because I kind of stopped eating meat. And so my biggest thing is I had all these reasons, too, that I, too, go out to eat. It's like I work too much, long days, I'm too tired. I don't know. I am paralyzed by the idea of cooking. But, I've had food in my house where, and I did this about a month ago. I did this huge purge. I had to go through all my cupboards, and I literally probably threw out about 5 bags worth of stuff that had expired. And it's just this, and that's chaos, the pure insanity of it all that I do. And it's like, I'll even have leftovers of, if a miracle, if I do cook, I don't want it, and it's just stuff just goes bad. And so there is an effect that I get. There's this something that I get. But what was, for me, was aha, it was the rationalization and the justification that I had. And I thought they were really legit reasons. But, it's just like the alcoholic. We rationalize and justify, certain behaviors or drinking and this and that. And I do it not only with other things, but with this going out to eat. So that was a big one. So I don't know if anyone has experienced that, but that has been a big one. I mean, it's all I can think about is where am I going to go out to eat? So it just totally, as you say, takes me out from being connected to God and in one. That's all I think about. So anyway, that's all I wanted to share.
Yeah, no, I thank you. Thank you for sharing that. But Tammy, I'm curious if you can just share a little bit about, like, because it sounds almost like it seems like the only normal life to me. This is like.
Can you still hear me, or did I mute myself?
Yeah, no, you're not muted right now.
Okay. Yeah, it is the only normal life. It's like, I just can't fathom the idea of freaking cooking, And then the thing I do is, I'll spend $500 on these Shun knives thinking that will make me cook, or I buy the best appliances or juicers or this and that, and that's going to make me do it. But no, it just sits there and they look really pretty. I'll use some things here and there. But, yeah, it is only the only way of life for me. It has become that way, which is, it's just, I can't fathom the idea of even cooking. I went into Williams-Sonoma looking at more stuff. I didn't do it because I'm like, this is insane. I saw the insanity of some of the stuff that I do. Anyway. So, yeah, is that what you were looking for? Yeah.
Yeah. And let me just tell you, like, I don't cook either. And I, just started. I have the most beautiful waterless pots. I've got so many. I've got so many appliances. I've got so much beautiful stuff. I have the intention. I'll buy food with the intention to cook, like perishable goods, you know, like with the intention to cook, and they just go rot. Like, I can prepare. I prepare food all the time. Like, I can throw shit together. I can, like, you know, but I can steam this, or I can, you know, like, cut up that or whatever. Like, I can do that, but I don't cook either. And I'm really curious if that's actually a thing that other people in our program experience. And I feel like some of the stuff that comes up with me around not cooking is that, ironically, I don't want to be around food that much. Like, I don't want to be in the kitchen that much. I don't want to be so involved in food for that many hours. Mm. Like, too much for me. And it's of course ironic, because, you know, I'm in food thoughts when I'm in my disease all the time, and yet I just can't, you know. So I'd be curious to find out if other people have that same not cooking thing.
Yeah, because food, I mean, I waste so much. I have wasted, I can't tell you how much money. Like you said, perishables, you know, great intentions, you know, I'll make this or that. And I don't want it. It once it's in there, it's like, no, I want to go out. Or, you know, I mean, seriously, I mean, that's what I do. I mean, I can piece my, you know, I could do like smoothies and juices and this. I do okay, but I don't like to cook. It's crazy. And that's a new thing. And I do think it is a stem from this disease. So anyway, I just wanted to put it out there.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Good stuff.
Yeah. We'll just do one more question or comment. So I'm going to pose a question, and you can either share on that question, or you can just make your own comment or have a question. So we're on number 9 here. Did you only act out around food when things were going badly, when you were under stress and needed to escape, or did you also act out around food when things were good? What are some examples? Who wants to bring us home?
Oh, hi, Deb. This is Deb C. from San Diego.
Hi, Deb.
Hi, how are you? I just want to thank you so much. First of all, I love the name of the workshop, Starving for God, because that's where I'm at. And I think we can all agree that this illness is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And some of the things that that you said today just jumped right out at me. One thing that I can remember, I was trying to write fast. I was writing compulsively. I see the world through a lens that there is never enough. And I remember years ago when I was taking a rebirthing training up in Northern California, we had to get in touch with our personal law. And mine was, I'm never enough. And so when you said that, you said more than that, but that's the part I wrote down. It just totally resonated with me that I'm always trying to fill that void of never being enough, no matter what addiction I'm playing out on at any particular time. And I am the real thing when it comes to food addiction. I was an addict for a long time, and I'm one of those old dope fiends that put down the spoon, picked up the fork, and played that out for a lot of years. I was lucky to be led to a program, a food program, where you weigh and measure, and I stopped eating sugar and the white flour a couple of years ago. I'm not in it anymore, because what I found out is even with that nice structure, I got too much into perfectionism, and which brought up shame if I couldn't be perfect, you know. So right now, I like what you say about meditating and trying to find out what works for us. And that's kind of where I'm at during this first step. So that's all I have to say. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your share. awesome shares, and I hope that some of you who I know were on the call, I hope that next time that you do share. I want to go over the homework for next week, and I also want to introduce. I've got a guest speaker who's going to be sharing next week and leading our call. And her name is Leilani, and she is an exceptional. She's just an exceptional contributor of our whole BBA fellowship down here in San Diego. She was the very first person who took me through the Big Book Awakening process, and it's such an honor to have her be with us and to share her experience. She recently went through the BBA work looking at her own food stuff, and so she's had incredible spiritual awakening through that process. And so I'm going to have her lead, so you're not just hearing me every single week. It's going to get boring. You're going to get bored of my voice. And we're just doing the first. So we're on assignment 3. So it's just the first part of Bill's story. So reference the sponsorship guide, version 5.0, and read what assignment 3 is. Email me or call me with questions about what the assignment means. Here's what I'm going to recommend that you do. That is an invitation that is over and above what the instructions are for the alcoholics who do this work. Is as you go through, where, because it's gonna have you transcribe this instruction. It's gonna have you. It's gonna say underline everything that you relate to. Okay, I'm going to invite you, don't just underline it, but write in the margin some notes about what your specific experience is. Take Bill's story and don't just turn it into your own alcoholic story. Turn it into your own story with food and with body and with this whole conversation that we're talking about. And so cross out whatever words you need to or whatever sentences or phrases that you need to and write in your experience so that you can start to see yourself in this. And when you get to that, did I feel that way? Did I think that way? Did I believe that way? Did I act that way? You start to see that this is actually telling your story. It's really easy to see that person over there who's an alcoholic, who lived in the 1930s, who was a guy, who has nothing to do with me and my current life right now. It's really easy to see the differences. So the invitation is to look for the similarities. And this is training us for what to do when we're in a meeting as well, that we're not looking for our differences, that we're looking for the ways that we're all the same and that we can see our reflection in each other. So give yourself time this week for your transcriptions. Allow yourself to really immerse yourself in this process, particularly with this. And then next week, really, really exciting that we get Leilani on this phone call. I know she's a sponsor to one or two of you, so I'm not even sure if you knew that she was going to be doing that, but we're really blessed to have her. That is all from me. So if you'd like to join me in the serenity prayer, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thank you so much for sharing this time with me and taking this time for you, really. And email me, talk to me in the week, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.